This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Good morning. Welcome to Medicine on Call. Today is the, the Monday quarterbacking after the election last night. And I, for one, and I'm sure Dave is probably going to put his two, I know he's going to put his 2 cents on this, that this is very gratifying in a lot of ways. But I want to caution that we have to watch. Just because the Republicans now have power doesn't mean that we need to sit back and let them take care of us. We still have the same fight to make sure that their rhetoric, that it's not just rhetoric, that they actually do something. Over the past 6 years, we've basically been told, you know, we really want to change things, but we can't because we don't have the Senate, we don't have any power, you know, all this letting things go, which, in my opinion, was like playing chicken. You know, they wanted to see the Democrats implode, which they did, and it was very gratifying to see all of the bad behavior not get rewarded. I mean, they pulled every single card they can possibly pull during this election cycle. They didn't win. It was just really awesome to see that people didn't fall for the race card, the sex card, the lies. I mean, these things that they were saying, they were just incredible. One of my favorites was, you can have 15 million new immigrants come into the country, or, you know, give them amnesty, and that would create 1 million jobs. That doesn't even make sense on any level, especially the people that came through in this last wave, which probably still are, which are not working age children, only going to go onto the social service roles in the country. I don't understand how that's going to create 1 million jobs except for more bureaucrats to control it. So, I mean, things like that, or the Texas campaign, which I've never heard such disgusting rhetoric in commercials. I'm so happy that they got stopped. I don't know, Dave, what's your opinion on it?
Well, certainly the Texas campaign, Wendy Davis, I think she showed her true colors of being nothing but a low-class individual that would, a man being in a wheelchair has nothing to do with being a candidate or being in a race, particularly as important as the governor's race. And I don't know if she came up with the idea or her advisors did or whoever, but she could have put a stop to it. It should have never run. I thought that was terrible. As far as everything else goes, I found one comment today that I find extremely, and nobody over the last few weeks has mentioned it until this morning, and I love what is being said this morning, is that now with the Senate, and no matter how fast he tries to go, Mr. Obama is dead with judicial appointments. He is dead in the water. And this is federal judges from coast to coast that he might want to appoint. They have to go through the Senate for approval. Anything that happens in the Supreme Court, he can't place a liberal in the Supreme Court now. The Senate has to approve it. So hopefully this will put an end to the, I mean, we've had the number of super liberal appointees to the bench has been incredible, but now it is stopped. And I think that's with all the other things that we have on the table, from immigration to Ebola to ISIS, everything else, I think this the realization that his appointment power has come to an end.
You're right, that's an excellent point, because I mean, they were stacking the deck for any revisit of Obamacare coming through the judicial process was going to get quashed, and they were just not going to let it get heard so they could get to the Supreme Court. And you're absolutely right. And it was just with disdain, basically. It didn't even seem like they thought about it. It was just a rubber stamp, no, we're not going to hear it. And you're right. The Supreme Court already has issues. But if they were allowed to continue to appoint, then we could go for the next 20, 30 years and then be in trouble and have the Constitution continually dismantled. So good point on that one. I certainly know from a medical standpoint, there's a lot of money that floats around in this race. And I just read an article, and I do agree with it. There wasn't anybody talking about how the insurance companies need to be reined in last night. Ted Cruz was probably the only person giving some sort of playbook as to how they would go about dismantling Obamacare. You know, and I think also Rand Paul, you know, bring up repeal bills, just keep bringing them. And if he vetoes them, then you just either you don't fund it, or you just continue to bring up smaller bills until the thing is, and make the onus on the Democrats and the president, so they have to own the fact that it's really unpopular and they're the ones that's continuing the process. That's probably one of the best playbooks that I've heard. Now that there's an option of doing it, that should be able to at least slow it or stop it. But that still has to happen. We have a ton of money. Look, the North Carolina race, money came in from all places, and we didn't even know where this money came from. So who's supporting these candidates, I guess it will remain to be seen. We have a lot of things that need to be reversed. The power of, you know, the food industry, genetically modified food labeling, the insurance companies, and the fact that Obamacare is not popular, for put it mildly. But now we're in the second iteration of this. What are they going to do to pull it back and stop the hemorrhaging of people losing their insurance that they liked, doctors being put out of business, hospitals given mandates to basically deny care to the seniors under the auspices of the 30-day readmission rule? All these things need to actually start being changed. I hope that they'll start listening to us. And now we need to be louder than ever, because they're glorying in the fact that they're in there. But it's like, what are you going to do for me? I did something for you as an electorate. We actually made a difference. Now it's their job to bring everything that's been basically hidden under a rug to light, whether that be Benghazi, whether that be looking at the lawlessness of this immigration policy and the health risks of the immigration policy, Ebola. I mean, the list is really pretty long at this point.
You know, I guess my curiosity is, how fast can we turn the aircraft carrier around in the bathtub? Mm-hmm. I think it's going to take a capitalistic approach, and I'm not sure that the insurance companies are capable of that. They love money, but I'm not sure they're really for us by any stretch of the imagination. And I just wonder if, you know, other things like the Liberty Health Share, other programs will be able to jumpstart fast enough if Obamacare is turned around or dismantled bit by bit and piece by piece, that there'll be able to be a slack taken up. I can't grasp it. I don't know how it's going to how the hospitals will have to react to it. They'll have to take new insurance.
Well, the good thing about medical cost sharing, like Liberty Health Share, it doesn't matter what the insurance companies do. It's irrelevant to that strategy. Actually, the more people that jump into Liberty Health Share or any of the medical cost sharing companies, make them more powerful. This is the power of the individual. And that's the beauty of it. And there's a growing list of doctors and hospitals, if you know how to play this game right, who will take fee for service and charge you a fraction of what you're going to pay in medical costs. So Liberty Health Share is actually, it doesn't matter what happens on the Hill. People need to know that they don't have to wait for anybody to make any reversals, any changes. They can just opt into that now. And there's also direct care practices, which, you know, fee-for-service doctors, who are practicing basically capitalism instead of this crony capitalism that's been foisted on us as if that's really democracy. It's not. I'm now getting exposed to a whole different avenue of healthcare delivery. When Dr. Josh came on last week, he really opened my eyes, and I hope to the listeners as well, that there's a lot of ways to play this game. Liberty HealthShare, I think, is a really good strategy for big-ticket items, you know, for surgeries, for, you know, procedures, for anything that you need that you're going to have to spend a lot of money and you can't keep it in a family practice setting where it's kind of simple, straightforward. Instead of doing a catastrophic plan, I would go with Liberty HealthShare because it's less restrictive. Every time you have to do something like, you know, bone marrow transplant or some sort of gene therapy, they're going to say that it's experimental, and they're not going to cover it. That's what insurance companies do. They deny you when your pants are down, when you really need their help. Then they find some backdoor way to deny it. Liberty HealthShare is not insurance. So if, I mean, we talked about it on the show, I have to have Dale back on. But even things like transplants are covered. That's amazing. So you actually have a strategy where you still are at the forefront of your care delivery, but you have enough power in this group, money pile that actually will support you. And the more people who opt into this, the more money is in this pile. And quite frankly, I think it would drop the cost of delivery. It's like anything. If you have enough people who want to pool their individual power, they are more powerful on average than a huge, unwieldy government where you've got all of these, feeders at the trough who are trying to get their dose or their meal off of you. That's the difference. And so, actually, I think there was a great opportunity for us to really seize the healthcare system back as doctors and patients. I feel the opposite way. While they're dithering, I hope they don't. I hope they do things to basically kill this thing. And if you get rid of the mandate for employers and patients, that would be two things that they could do right off the bat without having to repeal the entire thing, because people would run, vote with their pocketbooks and vote with their mouths as well, away from this, because only a small amount of people, a small subset of Americans want this, the ones who want to be taken care of from cradle to grave, and they can have it. It probably would work better, quite frankly, if you had less people in it than trying to force everybody into a broken system.
Well, just like you said, you can't force everybody anyway. So, and there are going to be some people that, you know, that are used to having their hand out and getting something for nothing when they never understood they were really not getting something for nothing. They were getting a lot of nothing for nothing. But, it would have come back eventually to the reality of the circumstances that it would have broken the system. I mean, the system was broke anyway, and it would have broken it completely. We're going to have to take a break, Dr. George. We'll be back with Dr. George and Medicine on Call right after this.
This is Dr. Elena George with your health tip of the day. Did you know skipping doses of medication can be dangerous? If you have a chronic medical condition like diabetes or high blood pressure, it's important to take the medication prescribed by your physician. It is also important to remember that although you take a medicine to treat a condition, it is not a cure for the underlying medical condition. It is used to control it. For example, taking medication for diabetes will lower your blood sugar. However, if you stop taking the medication, the sugar will rise again. Changes in both diet and lifestyle, like adding exercise to your routine, are equally important. Working with your physician by following his or her recommendations is the key to controlling your disease and maintaining your health. Ask questions if you don't understand something. Taking control of your health is the key to wellness. Please join me Wednesdays at 9 a.m. for Medicine on Call. This is Dr. Elena George.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
This is Dr. George from Peachtree ENT Center. Understanding health insurance is becoming more challenging. If you currently have insurance, you've probably noticed that it costs more to see your doctor. And if you were able to keep your doctor, it takes longer to get an appointment. The bad news is this trend is projected to continue. Your costs will continue to rise while your healthcare choice and access will continue to fall. The good news is Peachtree ENT Center has the answer to this problem. We are committed to working with you. We specialize in providing affordable care for patients without insurance, those who are underinsured, and those with high deductibles or catastrophic coverage. And we offer same-day appointments. You no longer have to choose between staying healthy and paying bills because Peachtree ENT Center is where patient care counts.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
And we're back on Medicine on Call with Dr. Elena George, and we're talking about the results of the election. And how soon do you think we'll... Well, I guess nothing can happen until after January the 6th when the new Congress is sworn in. But at that point, do you feel like the brakes will be put on and we will start seeing changes?
I certainly hope it starts sooner than that. I mean, during the election night, there was an announcement that the administration or that the president wants to meet with both houses of Congress, you know, on Friday. Maybe that's the beginning of a little bit of concession and a little bit of humility, and maybe this will all stop. Because it's been driven by hubris, it's been driven by cynicism, it's been driven by a complete lack of respect, not only for Congress, but for Americans. I'm not really happy with the rhetoric from the Democrats. Maybe it's saving face, but this mantra that the election last night, don't read anything into it, it doesn't mean that they're unhappy with the way the country was running. I mean, it was just like, are you delusional or what? I mean, and there's Harry Reid saying, what was it? I'm congratulating Mitch McConnell and saying how he looks forward to working with the Republicans. Since when?
Yeah.
For the last 6 years, he could care less. He pushed through all sorts of ridiculous things. Now the chickens are going to come home to roost with 51 votes needed to pass legislation. And all the things they try to use to dismantle the power of the minority. I hope, I know they're going to whine. This is what they do. When they lose, they're the loudest mouths, the biggest victims. But all the Republicans have to do is say, we just did what you passed and be done with it. This is what you get for cheating to try to stay in. Now they're going to have to reap what they sowed. I hope that the Republicans hold strong and do what the American public asked them to do. I mean, this is just, they really, literally got what they deserved, honestly. All of the women's war on women, I hope we don't hear that anymore. All of the, you know, this is kind of funny, too. I mean, all the electors they tried to rig with these open voter ID states, like North Carolina. I don't know if you saw this or read this, but they had one of those crews, you know, I forget his name, James O'Keefe went out there with the camera crew, hidden camera, with a person saying that I'm not an American citizen, I don't have a green card, but I've been registered to vote and I have a driver's license. So she said I'm undocumented, and they said no problem, you can go in and vote, just present your ID because you're registered. Every single one in that precinct, including one of the officials in the opposition's race, you know, the person running against Tillis, basically said it's okay to do this.
That's
so
incredible.
This is what voter, you know, fraud. This is fraud in action, and it was rife in that campaign. And great that he won, because he really had an uphill battle to do so. And then I heard there were machines where Texas, where the Republican nominee wasn't even on the ballot. I mean, his name, vote flipping, everything was going on. And this time, I think the difference is it got outed before the election. So people were watching big time. And it didn't work.
Well, I was very pleased with our results here in Georgia, very pleased across the country, actually. Also, this is sort of away from medicine, but I was pleased that Alabama took a big step forward with the Second Amendment and wrote the Second Amendment into the Alabama Constitution, so it can't be taken away. which I thought was a major step in the right to bear arms. And I think more and more states are going to have to do this. I was also very intrigued by the fact, and I would have bet money the other way, Florida rejecting legalization of medicinal marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
I would have never expected that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's still, even in Georgia, I'm not sure that we've actually legalized that either. It's still a work in progress. I'm certainly against anything that's recreational. And it turns out, too, that the government is able to tax marijuana sellers, or these entities that sell marijuana, 70%. So it's actually, they're not making any money on this. This is a federal law, 70% taxation. What are they, in France? It's amazing. So now we know exactly why the government's all for it, because it's a moneymaker. This is the same playbook again. Healthcare, they're all for everybody having Obamacare, but it's just a tax. It's a way to literally skim money from everybody's paycheck because it comes out before you have a chance to say anything. And not only that, if you do better the next year and they actually gave you a little crumb, they're going to take it back. So this is a win-win for the government. Every time they pronounce a new program, just remember who stands to gain. It's rarely the American people. It's always been the government, while they tell you how lucky you are to have your money taken. That's just craziness. Now, hopefully, the people who voted against this, and make no mistake, people voted against what was going on. They didn't vote for something. And I think the Democrats' argument is, well, that means that they didn't want things to change, which is ridiculous. They couldn't stand any of the people who were trying to shove this down our throats. And it didn't matter, honestly, whether you were, for the most part, you know, the hardcore people were never going to change. But young people were sick of it, living in their parents' basements. Who cares if you can stay on your parents' insurance until you're 26? If you're living in the basement, you know, without future. What's the point of that? The seniors finally woke up and stopped living the dream that the Democrats loved them when they were getting their benefits taken, being put in hospice, having someone like Rahm Emanuel's brother tell them, there's no reason to live past 72, you should just die. Finally, they woke up and said, I'm done. You really don't like me. You want me to just, you know, go away. I'm not going to do it. Good for the seniors. I think there's a growing number of minorities, black and Hispanic, who said we're tired of being taken for granted. Our neighborhoods are doing worse than anybody else. We're three times more likely to be unemployed. And even the people who, I'm sure the legal immigrants who are Latino, were like, I'm being painted with the same brush, and I did it the right way, and you're giving me nothing. So all these people, finally, all these divide and conquer strategies, I hope they're all gone now. Because it didn't work.
Well, I think without a doubt they will come back or try to raise their head again, but hopefully there'll be enough folks that will reject it. And this is, again, something that heard a lot last night, heard a lot more this morning, and yet nobody has come out and said, you know, the biggest win in this whole thing is that the system still works. We have rejected Zion. Obama can say whatever he wants to, but it was his policies, his one piece of legislation, Obamacare, that has been rejected. And to me, I think the real winner is the fact that the people stood up and the system has worked so far.
Mm-hmm.
And now it really has to work at this point with the Republicans doing something, and it's not even the Republicans anymore. I want to take that back. It's the people doing something. The people should, just like you said, the people should not stop with the election results. They should put the pressure on the people that they voted for.
They have to. I mean, this is the chance now. I mean, this has been an administration that's played the game better than anybody else, because they were mercenary. But on the surface, they were seen as benign, benevolent. They want all to be included, and you know, it's all about fairness. They use all the buzzwords to make people stand down. And if people did have a question, then they came out with the fangs. You're racist, you're sexist. They basically used intimidation and bullying to shut people up from every race. That's what they did. And while they were having these campaigns against bullying, against, you know, if you're against immigration, you're, you know, you're xenophobic and you hate people, you don't want Hispanics to actually be part of society, all these things, the education system, this is how they work. They've cut out, tried to dismantle every single charter school to run this Common Core crap. And what they did is they took away opportunity from the people who needed the most. I remember how this happened in Louisiana. And it took, I think Governor Jindal actually stood up against this thing. But they wanted to cut these kids in the worst neighborhoods, the worst schools. They wanted to take away their opportunity because the teachers' unions and, you know, the teachers' association wanted Common Core. This is all about being relevant. Because if people had a chance to leave the public school system, I don't care who you are and how much money you have, people know it doesn't work. And if they had a chance to go into a charter school, they were going to go. And if the system is built on bodies in the chair, that's how the system makes money, they're going to do everything in their power to cut out the opposition, to cut out the choice that people have. And that's what they did. And talk about cynical and racist. To trap kids in a school system where they can't read, can't write, it's a direct pipeline to jail, while you're telling them how much you love them, is just, it's insane. And I hope that also that people will stop, and I think it's probably now turning the tide. Actually, you know, it's come down to the First Lady saying that if you're black, you should vote Democratic. Forget who's on the ballot, just vote. That's insanity. So that means you now just become just a body to push a button. Who cares what you want? Who cares what your aspirations are? You just go in lockstep, don't think, and just vote for your own demise is what they're trying to make people, ask people to do. And I think this election, in my opinion, hopefully has made the Republicans stand up and take notice that if we do stand for something and we do make it really inclusive, and I don't, no one wants a handout, they want an opportunity. Just if you really believe that and start preaching that and start giving opportunity, the Republican Party will now start to get, it will be a bigger tent. People don't want handouts. They don't want government welfare checks. Most people don't. And a third of the country is now on a handout. This is the opportunity for the Republicans to actually change that. And I think now that we're all paying attention to them, we need to hold them to the fire and make them do it.
Absolutely. You know, I saw a very interesting thing, and I was very proud, and I didn't see all of it, but I saw enough of it. And that was the fact that high school kids were taking a stand in this election, which I thought was very interesting, and it was directly aimed at the First Lady. The young lady that was a spokesman for this high school said, you know, we have nothing against a healthy cafeteria food that we can choose from, but to dictate that we get less than rations.
I know.
You know, this is crazy, and I love the fact that it may have taken getting to their stomachs to make them realize that this was bad, but kids were standing up and saying, well, we don't want to eat this. We want a selection of foods like we used to have. So it'll be interesting to see if Michelle's program is kicked out of public schools as well.
It doesn't work. I mean, it's disgusting. It's like a gulag, basically. What they get is such a small amount and without any taste. I mean, I remember going to school. When it comes down to lunch and you skip breakfast, you can barely concentrate on what's going on because you're looking for lunchtime. I mean, this is not a way to educate kids. And they're talking about longer school days, longer school years. It's like being in prison, basically, between the drills and the fact that you have to worry about, you know, going through metal detectors to get into the school. And it's just not conducive, in my opinion, to really being able to learn in a relaxed, comfortable environment.
And that's we owe it to our kids. With that, we've got to take a break. We're going to be back with Medicine on Call and Dr. Elena George right after this.
This is Dr. Elena George with your health tip of the day. Did you know that dizziness may be a sign of heart disease, iron deficiency, high or low blood pressure, low blood sugar, or an inner ear infection? Dizziness can take the form of a spinning sensation, also known as vertigo, or a feeling of lightheadedness. The individual can also feel faint or have a rapid heartbeat. If you take high blood pressure medication, remember to take the medication daily as directed to control your blood pressure. Diabetics must remember to eat after taking their medication and to eat at regular intervals. If you have anemia, make sure to take a multivitamin that contains iron and to eat vegetables such as spinach. Dizziness after a cold or flu may be due to a virus. If you have dizziness, it is important to see your doctor for a complete physical examination. Please join me Wednesdays at 9 a.m. for Medicine on Call. This is Dr. Elena George. This is Dr. George. Join me Wednesday mornings for Medicine on Call and participate in a lively conversation. Learn what's happening behind the headlines in medicine. Understand Obamacare. And learn how to protect yourself and navigate the system.
Hello, I'm Dr. Mike Karuchak. Have you ever wondered what doctors talk about amongst themselves? If you do, join us on the Doctor's Lounge and hear the doctors' conversations amongst themselves. Join me and my co-host, Dr. Hal Schertz, every Thursday morning, 8 to 9 a.m.
This is Dr. George from Peachtree Ear, Nose, and Throat Center. Do you have problems with sinus pain and pressure? Do other people smell things that you don't? Have you lost the joy in eating because food just doesn't taste like it used to? Is your nose always stuffy no matter what you do? Maybe you have sinus or nasal polyps, a chronic sinus infection, or allergies that are either undertreated or have never been treated at all. At Peachtree ENT Center, we use state-of-the-art equipment so you can see the problem. You'll be a partner in your care, and together we will decide the course of treatment, because we believe in old-fashioned medicine, where we take the time to fix the problem, not just medicate the symptoms. We specialize in minimally invasive balloon dilation sinus surgery, correction of a nasal septal deviation, and turbinate reduction surgery that can be done in the office, getting you back to work the next day. And you can rest assured that all options will be discussed before surgery is recommended, because Peachtree ENT Center is where patient care counts. If you'd like to make an appointment, call 404-591-9100 or reach us on the web at www.peachtreeentcenter.com.
This is americaswebradio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
And we're back with Medicine on Call and Dr. Elena George, and we're having a very post-election discussion. And it's going to be interesting to see how fast, you know, the reality of this is the Republicans have 2 years, and if I were they, or if they asked me for a suggestion, I would say limit your amount of sleep. Because they only have 2 years, and they got lots of work to do before the next election. And they could easily, just as easily lose as they did win.
Well, it was an anger vote away from the Democrats, anything but them, but it wasn't a love fest for the Republicans either.
No.
They were the only game in town, and quite frankly, listening to the analysis last night, they basically handpicked these candidates, and they really elbowed out anybody who was Tea Party, anybody who was Libertarian. They did their best to try to cull anybody who was going to be a problem for them when they got in. So I'm not saying that this is pie in the sky at all. I'm just happy to see the other ones go, because I'm sick to death of the divide-and-conquer strategy and the rhetoric. It's just nauseating. But I'm watching these guys very closely. There's a possibility they could have a, you know, blood fest right now, you know, fighting against Mitch McConnell becoming the Speaker of the House, the majority leader.
Senate, yeah.
I mean, that could be a problem, and they could waste time with that instead of, or the Tea Party sect can be literally just totally ignored, which is to their peril, because those guys are really the people who are the conscience of the country, not the rhinos, not the, you know, cocktail Republicans who just want to have their chance to feed at the trough. I'm not interested in those guys either. They've got a mandate to fix health care, get rid of Obamacare, to really hold the administration accountable for all the lawlessness that's gone on, and to make sure that they don't kill the Constitution. I mean, they've been steady trying to just dismantle the Second Amendment and the First Amendment, to tell you the truth. They want the country to, the demographics to change. They've been following UN mandates. This is all about Agenda 21 and world, you know, global governance is what they've been doing. The UN has been basically running the show, what wars you go into. They're even stating, you know, weighing in on states, on cities like Detroit, and whether you can charge people for their electricity. I mean, that's outrageous. That needs to stop. All this gun control treaty, which they're trying to pass through, bypass the Congress, is they've been trying to do that for a while. You know, the pipeline, all sorts of things where they're killing the economy in a way to lower our standards so we fit in with the rest of the world. We talk about it on a healthcare level all the time. The fact that ICD-10 is coming online, it's socialized medicine, it's about rationing, it's about palliation, it's not about real healthcare, and it's all a scheme to just raise money and lower your standard of health. That's what it's designed to do. I would love to see oversight now on USDA, on the fact that we have all of these food industry giants literally taking away our choice to stay healthy, and they're allowing toxic things to enter the food supply. You know, we're talking about Agent Orange. That's the next thing that Monsanto is trying to bring into the food supply. You know, the Roundup Ready seeds, they pale in comparison to what Agent Orange could do to us. It's a cancer, it's a carcinogen. And they're talking about, because their weed-killing effect is dead, because Roundup Ready seeds, the weeds have become resistant. So you have to use more pesticides in these foods. It's been shown now. It's not even a question anymore that they cause cancer. Tumors in rats, fertility issues in cows. And now we're seeing the same thing come out in our population. Allergy, crazy food allergies, and gut problems in children and adults who eat these genetically modified wheat. Why can't the government now, and I hope the Republicans will now start to pay attention to what's going on. I mean, the person who's running the FDA, Bill Sack, is in the bed of these giant, food manufacturers. No one says anything about these appointees, but they all stood to gain, and they were well-placed to keep the status quo while they appeared to be doing something. That's what I want to guard against, and that's what the American population needs to guard against. It's not what you say, it's what you do. And what's your pedigree for real? Where are you coming from? Whose corporate, you know, bedroom have you come out of? That's what we really need to pay attention to.
Speaking
while
of
that's happening, I'm sorry, I mean to cut you off, but while that's happening, from a medical standpoint, it's time for us to take more responsibility, opt out of these systems. If you don't feed them, then they really do wither on the vine.
Changing the subject a little bit, but what's happened to Dr. Frieden?
Oh, God, I don't know. I haven't heard anything from... Well, the CDC it's made statements on its website, but they haven't made them on TV, which is interesting. First, it was about 10 days ago that Ebola can be spread by droplet, meaning coughing or sneezing. And instead of it being direct contact, now you need to be at least 3 feet away from the person, otherwise you can be infected. And then they came out maybe 2 days later and said, no, not 3 feet, it's actually 6 feet. And then the next couple of days they scrubbed the website, so they totally got rid of it. I mean, who knows what they're talking about? I don't think anybody's listening to them anymore. While they quietly continue their process of bringing people into the country. And I read online in various local newspapers that there are other Ebola scares, but they're not on the national radar anymore. North Carolina had one where somebody flew into New York, took a bus to North Carolina, from Liberia, by the way, and then had a 102 fever and was admitted to a hospital in North Carolina. Same deal in Portland.
Oh, was this the Duke patient admitted to Duke?
Over the weekend, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And then there's another lady from Liberia who's living in Portland, recently returned, who spiked the fever there. I mean, it's all over the country. They're just not talking about it anymore. And it's obvious that this check your temperature at the point of entry nonsense doesn't work. And they're using this nurse who's a mouthpiece. But you have to look at her pedigree, too. She works for the CDC. She went through an intelligence program, a two-year program in the CDC. She's an officer in the CDC. So she's basically a propaganda piece who's trying to make it seem as if she's under attack, and all these healthcare delivery personnel are under attack, and it's not fair, and she's a victim. You know what? If I decide to go to, or any healthcare professional decides to go to West Africa, we do so knowing that we're putting ourselves at risk, our families at risk, and if all of these guys who are totally suited up still get it, I would not have an issue at all with being quarantined for up to 42 days to make sure that I wasn't going to bring it back into the country to my family, to my coworkers. It's complete selfishness that these people just do them. And I take offense to that. You know, the ironic thing, the people who have come in, the civilians from Liberia who've actually spiked fevers voluntarily, like, went to the hospital. They actually did quarantine themselves for the most part in their homes. But it's the medical personnel that are doing them. You got Snydermen running around getting fast food. You got this one in Maine biking and doing God knows what, you know, doing media photo ops with people instead of staying in her house. And you got the other guy running around bowling and just getting on train. It's just nauseating. That's why people don't trust the system. And I don't either at this point.
You know, after listening to Hickok, the nurse, you know, my first, and I guess I'm a conspiracist, or I'll be labeled that for saying this, but I'm like you, or as soon as I heard her talk, I said, you know, she's a plant.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I can't say one way or the other whether she might or might not have it. You know, I'm not even sure she did what she is accused of doing as far as being in wherever in Africa. You know, maybe so, maybe not, I don't know. But just the way she was talking, it just grabbed me that she was a CDC plant or a plant of the government or something.
Well, they actually scrubbed it off the website, but there actually was an article that I tweeted that actually showed her picture in the yearbook, if you want to put it that way, of the people who trained in this intelligence corps. And apparently another story came out that her roommate in West Africa actually does have Ebola. So that makes her double high risk, because she's rooming with someone there. And now she's still in the incubation period. And there's still a percentage of people, WHO has said so, that will be symptom-free, yet they can still carry it. Do we know if she's one or not? They only tested her twice when she first came in. So just because you test negative doesn't mean you don't have it. You have to have enough live virus in the bloodstream that it can be picked up on the test, but it doesn't mean you're not infected. This is where we're getting this half-truth, and it's criminal behavior to make people think, oh, you basically have to, you know, bleed into an open wound in order to get it. It's really hard to get. Gupta had an article a couple of days ago, which complete misinformation. I mean, he's telling people it's easier to get the flu than it is to get Ebola, which is crap. If that's the case, then how come people are in biohazard level 4 gear and they still get it? To say something like that is unethical.
Well, I think
no other reason that you don't know.
I think you hit it on the head with it's criminal, as far as I'm concerned.
Agreed. But it's all designed to make people's guard come down. Oh, I can do whatever I like because it's really hard to get it. And if these healthcare professionals can do it that way, then so can I. That's the attitude that we're trying to, or I think that the powers that be are trying to inoculate us with.
Right.
Nothing to see here. Move along. We have this. You know, we're going to tell you how to handle this, and you don't have to worry. Nothing to worry about. Small chance you'll never get it. Well, now that the election's over, and now that all the smoke is clearing, what are we going to hear coming on the radio stations and TV about people who are being treated or being tested or all over the country? I just don't know, but I'm a little bit dubious about the whole thing, since you're not stopping point of entry, since it's gone crazy in West Africa. And we're getting all sorts of weird mixed messages. Now they're saying that the rate in Liberia has dropped. I don't know about that. I don't know if I agree with that. Where's the proof?
Well,
last week they said it's going to be 10,000 cases by November, right? Now it's basically, you know, hospitals are now half empty. I don't get that. I don't understand how that works.
We're going to have to let people think about it while we take a quick break. We'll be back with Medicine on Call and Dr. Elena George right after this.
This is Dr. Elena George with your health tip of the day. Did you know that wellness and prevention is the key to living a long and healthy life? For example, common diseases such as acid reflux, high cholesterol, non-insulin-dependent diabetes, and high blood pressure, in some cases, are caused by poor nutrition. Scientific studies suggest the use of nutritional supplements, a healthy diet, and exercise can control and, in some cases, prevent disease. Use nutritional supplements that are formulated using good manufacturer practice standards, and remember to let your doctor know what you are taking, since it can react with prescription medication. Please join me Wednesdays at 9 a.m. for Medicine on Call. This is Dr. Elena George.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
This is Dr. George from Peachtree ENT Center. Understanding health insurance is becoming more challenging. If you currently have insurance, you've probably noticed that it costs more to see your doctor. And if you are able to keep your doctor, it takes longer to get an appointment. The bad news is this trend is projected to continue. Your costs will continue to rise while your healthcare choice and access will continue to fall. The good news is Peachtree ENT Center has the answer to this problem. We are committed to working with you. We specialize in providing affordable care for patients without insurance, those who are underinsured, and those with high deductibles or catastrophic coverage. And we offer same-day appointments. You no longer have to choose between staying healthy and paying bills because Peachtree ENT Center is where patient care counts.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
And we're back with Dr. Elena George on Medicine on Call and her post-election celebration show. and we hope the celebration lasts more than just a couple of days, as a matter of fact.
Celebration is short-lived. Now I need to get down to business. I haven't changed my focus. I mean, this is still all about fixing a broken healthcare system, not letting anybody off the hook, not listening to what they say, but making sure they do what they say they're going to do. That's even more important now because we have the potential to say overall that, hey, we won. Now we have someone who's on our side who's going to start doing what we want them to do, but, you know, history doesn't necessarily prove that to be the case. And so I think I would call up my congressperson, my senator, and let them know I'm watching you. You have a mandate, but you have to do what I ask you to do, what I want you, what I sent you there to do, not what you want to do. And let them know that right off the bat so they don't get lulled and complacent. And I just want to make another statement about Ebola just really quickly. There's something kind of odd about this whole presentation of Ebola. In Africa, it's killing about 70% of the people, and it's a hemorrhagic fever, meaning people they die because of organ failure and catastrophic blood loss. That's not happening in the United States. Why? I mean, if this is the same strain, you should start to see the same type of presentation. And what we're seeing is just the upper respiratory symptoms, just the malaise, the headache, that sort of thing, but we're not seeing any bleeding, which is really interesting. Just from a scientific point of view, is it a different strain? Why is it presenting different in the United States? Why does it have I'm happy to say it, it's got less than a 70% mortality rate, but then that means either it's mutated, it's presenting a different way. Does that make it more communicable? What's going on? And the fact, too, that the people who, you see this on TV, you don't see anybody in hazmat suits. In New York, there was policemen disposing things from the doctor's apartment in regular waste disposal outside of the building. I mean, it's not being taken seriously. And now I wonder, because I've been saying it for a long time, why aren't they taking a lot more hands-on approach, being really very aggressive about quarantining people and suiting them up properly? And we're still telling the medical personnel it's okay to basically wear a paper gown and paper, you know, covers for your shoes. It's not. So I just have a question. I think people need to, again, critically think about this, because it would make sense that they're not so concerned, because it maybe not the same thing, but they're calling it Ebola. Who knows? But I think we need to, again, question our authority.
Do our own research. Does the bleeding start as soon as the diarrhea and the temperature and the vomiting, does all of that start at the same time, or is the bleeding the last phase of the infection?
Well, the overwhelming bleeding is the last stage of the infection, because you've got organ damage, death, you know, the, not to be graphic, but the lining of the gut sloughs, and that's where you see the catastrophic bleeding. But you do see bloody diarrhea. You do have nosebleeds. You do have, that's part of hemorrhagic fever. And people do recover from it, but it's not the majority of those infected. That's what makes this, to me, completely different. Or I have a question about it. So, and just the response is bizarre. And they're all over the place with their response. That's the other thing that makes you think, why is this being, you know, why is it so different? This is the same strain. It's okay to be on a seat next to them, and then you say, well, the sweat has the virus in it, so you can't touch it. It lives on surfaces up to, you know, from hours to days, longer in cold environments. That's not how it's presenting in Africa, necessarily. I don't know. I'm just throwing it out there for people to think about. It just didn't make a lot of sense to me, and it still doesn't.
No, even from the first doctor that came to Emory, I guess I was a little taken back as I watched it develop. But him climbing out of the ambulance the next, I was expecting the gurney and all of this. And
sure.
Him walking into the, and then the I think the nurse that came here, she was on a gurney. But then the rest of them have, I wouldn't say jumped out of the ambulance, but they've been totally mobile. And if you're that sick, I have a hard time understanding how you can be that sick and that mobile.
I do too, actually. And the vaccine issue also comes up, really a question mark on that. Three different vaccines with three different methods of killing it. It takes years for a vaccine to come to the market, but they're going to have a fast track to like this month and next month. That doesn't make a lot of sense to me. And my favorite is the typical industry being held harmless for any problem with anybody giving the vaccine. So they're indemnified. They have immunity to anything bad happening to an individual who takes or is given the vaccine. That's a recipe for nonsense. And it happens in the flu vaccine. It happens with Gardasil. And we found in all of these that there's a problem. There's negative consequences for individuals who take this. So if this becomes a hold harmless, you just put it out there, experiment on people, and if something happens, oh well, that's an issue. And of course it's going to be healthcare workers, people in Africa who are going to be, and soldiers who are going to get it first and who won't have a say-so most of the time. And if, God forbid, this doesn't work, what do you do then? You know, this is the best way to handle this is epidemiological studies basically say if you don't have a cure for something, it's deadly, then the quarantine is number one strategy to use. You keep people in one place until it works its way out and it doesn't arbitrarily infect other people. That's how it works. And they've totally breached any epidemiological protective mechanisms. Nigeria is not the only country that I've seen, and Sierra Leone is also doing it, where they actually have put a quarantine. They don't allow these people or their people to leave, period. You are kept. And I know it's not a great situation. And my issue, too, is if we would stop letting people come in and really concentrate our resources on them, we'd be able to send them food. We'd be able to send them medical personnel. These folks are now in a position where they're starving because they're in a blockade, no food's coming in, and they're quarantined, and they're killing these people because they don't have enough food and other resources. And we're spending our time setting up hospitals here when we really could spend our money. I'd rather see it go there to really help people who need it and protect us at the same time. I don't think you can contain it by letting it run wild. That doesn't even make sense on any level. And it's not about humanitarian. Whatever they're saying is whitewash, essentially. We'd be much better served, and so would the people in West Africa, if the world would marshal resources and send them there. That's what Cuba's done. They sent about 400 doctors there. They're the only country that I see actually on the ground doing something. And they're not making a big deal out of it. They just do it. This is all drama everywhere else.
Oh, yeah. I think it's... I saw some, and it's the media taking something, and I, you know, I don't know how much politics that the mixture is like a bowl of mayonnaise. Tell me what color it is, you know, as you're stirring it up. But the other day they had this little girl on, and it was a bleeding heart thing. Now, I'm sorry she's lost both of her parents. I'm sorry that she's homeless, but I mean they played it to the hilt, and I'm not even sure the little girl won an actress, for all I know. But it was one of these things that, okay, but, you know, I don't know how much of that we need compared to, like you said, Cuba doing what they're doing, and we could be doing things differently and, like you said, attacking it on its front. Don't bring it here. The silliest thing I heard, how did you like the idea of, well, as people are getting sick, we'll bring them here and take care of them?
Does it make sense? Oh, Ella, you forget the part about $200,000 for the air ambulance and $350,000 for treatment. You forgot about that. Well, is this a bailout for the hospitals who takes care of them? I mean, I don't know. It doesn't make a lot of sense. And they're acting like every single hospital is equipped to handle this. An average doctor or nurse is not equipped to handle a biohazard level 4 virus. They're just not. That's special training. Even in the military, and you're a doctor in the military, you don't handle these viruses. You literally have to be trained to do it. And years, not months, not years. Taking a course on the weekend. That's not what you do.
Well, I tell you what, we're going to have to, what we ought to do with your show is take 5 minutes out of your hour every week and have an update on what Congress is doing.
I think that's appropriate. And also how we can work around it if we have to.
Exactly. With that, Dr. George, thank you as always. And we will see you or talk with you again at this time next week.
All right. Have a great day. Thank you for listening to Medicine on Call.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.